Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Roto-World Football Podcast. Now it is the draft edition of the most important podcast in the universe, and it's important now because we're going to have Matt Waldman on this episode. As you know, Matt Waldman is constantly cited on this very podcast by myself, Evan Silva, Patrick Doherty, Ray Summerlin, so on and so forth, like countless names. And Matt writes the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, which right now you can pre-order. I believe the publishing date each and every year is April 1st. It's a little holiday on my calendar every single season. And Matt and I will be discussing the quarterback prospects. It's that time of year. And if you enjoy this podcast at any moment, if you enjoy whatever Matt's about to say, be sure to subscribe. And if you're already subscribed, consider rating and reviewing. So without further ado, it is the professor himself, Matt Waldman. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, my friend. It's nice to be on, and I appreciate the fact that you guys like my work and have me on each year. So it's wonderful to be back.
Well, I mean, what I love about it is that you have a process and that you show your work. Like I'm kind of in this mode right now and I'll start out of the gate. I'm just going to say it. Like if you're a person who's watching prospects and you're not posting clips or games that you're watching alongside of those opinions, like how do I know if you're actually watching? Right. So like that's just the simple thought process that goes through my brain of, well, if you're watching it, then you should kind of share what you're watching to show where your opinions come from. And no one does that better than you with obviously the clips you post on Twitter, but also the film room sessions. And everything that you put on YouTube and the RSP as well. So if any of you listening out there are not in tune with Matt's work, go and certainly check it out.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that when you talk about, you know, just being able to show what you're showing your work, I mean, I think part of that process is just for yourself. I mean, if you're really thinking about how you define work, how you define what you're looking at, sometimes how you would define it in a conversation with someone. You know, if you're having beers with someone and talking about, you know, what makes a good pass catcher, you would probably talk about in some informal way how you define that. Well, I mean, when you really actually put it down on paper and then try and live to what it is that you're grading, it starts to evolve over time. The more that you learn, the more that you see, there are more times that there's exceptions to the rule that you've created. And so, you know, I've been spending close to 15 years doing that on a very, you know, strict level with each of these skill positions. And I've changed my definitions multiple times over the years. And I put that in my publication in terms of how I've updated it, you know, how I grade these players. And it teaches you a lot. It's not just about what other people learn, but about what you learn through that process.
And I'm sure we'll get to it at some point during this conversation, but like just how even my process has changed over the last few years in terms of what I prioritize, what I don't, things I learn from. Yeah. I mean, it's a constant thing. And I've only been doing this for what, 5 or 6 years, maybe a little longer than that. I want to forget that first year I did it. But I mean, you and I had conversations even dating back to then, and I'm sure, and I can tell how yours has changed a little bit. I'm sure you can do the same thing with me. And by the way, I believe the website, and correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, is mattwaldmanrsp.com. So let's get all the plugs out of the way.
Yep, that's all out of the way.
Yeah, that's where you can go find the Rookie Scouting Portfolio for basically every single skill position player that is in this draft. And Matt certainly finds gems that a lot of other people don't, so, or identifies them, I should say. Okay, let's start off with Sam Darnold. Why not, right? This
yeah.
is the USC quarterback that many of you know. I would say right now the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick, and I think how we're going to do this, Matt, is I kind of give a line or two just about the general sense or my sense of the player, and you either can agree, disagree, and just take it on the journey, the story that you usually do. So Sam Darnold, to me, Matt, I see a quarterback that is all over the place with his footwork. And a lot of that might be dating back to his time as like a sophomore in high school as a linebacker. Like he doesn't throw from a balanced base. He is not mechanically sound that a lot of the coaching Twitter, coaching universe might want him to be. But despite that, many times he overcomes it and compensates for it just with ridiculous plays with his arm down the field at multiple levels of the field. And he's also quite mobile as well.
Yeah, and I think that this is one of those situations where we talk about exceptions to the rule. And I think that when you oftentimes every year, everyone's always touting an exception to the rule. And what happens is that when you're a little less experienced, you're more prone to, you know, touting guys who are exceptions to the rule who turn out not to be very exceptional. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, what happens is when you gain experience in this field, you tend to be less open to the exceptional, and then you miss out on the occasional player who makes a big difference. And I think that there are a lot of guys who go in the first round who sometimes end up being exceptions to the rule, where they're nitpicked about things that hurt lesser players a lot, but because of their skills, they tend to show that it's not as big of a deal. Like for me, you know, quarterback technique, you know, you said about Darnold's footwork and his ability, you know, sometimes his stance isn't where it needs to be to throw the optimal ball, or that he has, you know, he has this kind of a wind up with his release that
and,
can
and
be.
And I would even go a step further than like stance, not exactly where it needs to be, to even go to the point where he's like kind of like duck footed in terms of like they're pointing in opposite directions, and like he's throwing from like a completely unbalanced base that like stuff I've never even seen before.
Yeah. I mean, oftentimes I would say even parallel, you know, duck footed parallel to the line of scrimmage with your feet. So, I mean, a lot of those things that, you know, you watch Jay Cutler doing it at college and he got away with it for a while. Sometimes he gets away with it in on certain throws in games, you know, as a pro, but then also has, you know, thrown a lot of inaccurate passes when he didn't have to make, you know, when he could have set his feet in a better position. And I think when you look at Darnold and you look at the arm motion, you look at the footwork, the question that I've always come back around to is, can he throw accurate passes that way? And does it inhibit his ability to become a better player? And where does it inhibit his ability? And I think that where it inhibits him is when he's in the pocket, things are not clean, and he could, you know, in contrast, a player like Tom Brady might be able to continue in a certain rhythm of moving his feet, you know, in a clean, precise fashion, and move from one progression to the next progression in rhythm and be in that throwing position to deliver the ball. And then, you know, he's right on time, just like that train. And so then when he...
I'm so sorry. Like, the train is like the third person in this podcast each and every week. I'm not sure if you get to listen because I know you're busy during the season. But like, and I swear the train hasn't been going for an hour before this, Matt. But as soon as you
hop on,
we're all hopping on board is what we're doing.
We're like Jake and Elwood and, you know, in the Blues Brothers, you know. And
I'm trying to get myself out of this hellhole, Matt, is basically what I'm trying to do.
No, it's cool. So, I mean, but it is. It's you know, Tom Brady's kind of like that train that's on time all the time because of the fact that that footwork is that uniform, mechanical, very precise type of movement.
You know what when you're going to get play in and play out inside of a clean structure with someone like Tom Brady.
Yeah, but the thing is, while Sam Darnold may miss the, you know, miss the 534 and be at 537 occasionally, you know, Sam Darnold at the same time does things that Tom Brady will never be able to do. Yeah. And it's his ability to, you know, avoid certain types of pressure and throw the ball from an off-balance position with great touch, great distance, or even sometimes great velocity on those throws that make plays that, you know, you look at him and you say, that's more what Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers could do. Sometimes in an inspired moment where the Blake Bortles reads the coverage correctly and is in a good position to deliver the ball, you're going to see some of that, you know, more of a gunslinging type of, you know, physical skill on that end of the spectrum. So I'd say when you look at Darnold, the more I was skeptical at first, but the more I watched him, the more I thought He continues to make play after play after play that's NFL caliber when you project it. And yeah, he's going to miss some. Yeah, he's going to make some boneheaded plays trying to do a little too much. But more than I expected, he's the guy that is really, you know, I joke about it as saying, you know, it's get or done type of, throwing mechanics. Brett Favre had that. He kind of has that get or done ability. You know, Russell Wilson on the same level. Sometimes you ask questions about him, but is it replicatable? Is it something that's just that he can continue to do? And I think that Sam Darnold fits that exception, and he is worth a first round pick.
And if I can just kind of isolate that one talking point for a moment, it's kind of the same or similar one that we had. And I'm not calling them similar prospects, but with Patrick Mahomes last year. And I'm not going to say it's a backyard type football, but it's just a style that we don't see very often, because at the quarterback position, and we'll get into this with a lot of these names, they want kind of a cookie cutter, right? They want a what you see is what you get type. They want an extension of the offensive coordinator, the head coach on the field. And to me, I'm not part of like the technique or mechanics community, right? I'm no coach. What I want to try to see is what succeeds, and like you said, is that repeatable at the NFL level? And so I'm with you. If sure, there are going to be plenty of occasions where his mechanics, just from being off balance, off base, from different platforms, might hold him back or not get the result that you want to. But then you go and look at the plays that he can make, Sam Darnold, and you see the ones that he can make that others cannot, and you say, hey, I have to take this and in order to get this. And too often, Matt, I think with quarterbacks, and I think we see this with like Jameis Winston, right? Where right now it seems like Dirk Cutter wants to put Jameis Winston in a box and like not allow him to make any mistakes. But to me, when I watch Jameis, like his kind of high variant style is who he is and who he will be, right? So a coach needs to work with that and around that and not try to make him into something that he's not. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think where I would diverge with Jameis, and I like Jameis, but I've always joked around that Jameis Winston's the type of guy that has a flamethrower and he'll burn down his offense in the first half and then somehow figure out how to turn that flamethrower onto the defense in the second half. And part of his problem, though, I think where I think Cutter maybe and maybe just other people look at Winston and say his feet are kind of slow. He's kind of got that loping kind of stride that where his processing of the information through his feet seems a little slightly slower than what you'd want to see. And it's not that he's got a slow processor, you know, in terms of his mind for the game. I just think that the way that he moves is a little bit on the slower end of the
lethargic
spectrum.
Lethargic at times.
Yes. You know, I remember Byron Leftwich kind of moving that way, and Leftwich had a good mind for the game, too.
Mettenberger at times as well.
Yes. And when you look at Darnold, Darnold's got very quick feet. He's got the, you know, Patrick Mahomes, who you mentioned wonderfully, who I love, is got great feet. People talk about his footwork not being where it needs to be, but he does things in terms of being able to get in the position in a throwing position that may not even be conventional, but he does it so smoothly and so quickly. I think he has excellent feet. They just may not be refined to the traditional ways. And I'm with you. I call them Q-bots. And I think that that's basically what the NFL wants is grandpas who are at the, you know, people who are 25 who, you know, think, talk, and approach the media like a grandfather. And basically, you know, at, you know, they're 25 going on 67 heading to the 4:30 supper at Denny's. You know, I mean, I think that that's basically what they're looking for on the outside. And what happens there is that it's because they don't know how to. I don't think they know how to develop the position within the constraints that they're given as, you know, in terms of general managers giving constraints of how many years they have or how many games these players have or how many mistakes players can make due to the public pressure and the you know, I would say the way that how just capricious and fickle, you know, owners are and how much pressure they put on their regimes because some business interest that they're dealing with is talking crap to them about, you know, how they, you know, about how their quarterback's playing after a bad week. And then they suddenly, you know, change their mind on the whole game plan and scrap that and frustrate their entire personnel department and their coaching staff and have to deal with the friction there. And it sounds silly that that's what happens, but that's real business. And the NFL is a real business. You know, it's not some imaginary fairy tale of a, everything's perfect, you know, same dysfunctional stuff that happens there happens, you know, happens in the real world. And you see that happening to these quarterbacks who are not CEOs. They're, I call them operations managers. They've got to, basically, they got to deal with the dream that the owners and GMs sell. And usually that's a nightmare too at the same time. And they have to translate, you know, leadership from the coaching staff to what happens on the field. And when you look at Darnold, I think you look at him, he's not the typical Q-bot, but he can make the plays that the capricious nature of, you know, upper management in the NFL will love, as long as that they can, you know, they have a good enough coach on the field who can tell them to just calm down and go back to, you know, selling luxury boxes and not pay attention to what's going on the field quite with quite the eye that they tend to do as micromanagers.
And finally, Sam Darnold's super young as well. Like, I believe if he starts week one, he'll be the youngest quarterback ever to do so. At least in a very, very long time. So just something to keep in mind as we move forward.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to Josh Rosen, if that's cool with you.
Yeah.
To me, I see Josh Rosen shining maybe more than any other quarterback in this class, kind of in that intermediate and downfield level. Like, he just looks so natural, right? And I understand that the look is kind of what people are going for here with Josh Rosen, but when you watch him, you can see those plays, those same plays being made on Sundays. There are certainly times where he not necessarily panics, but makes the incorrect decision of throwing into traffic or to a play that's not open, trying to force a ball because he believes so much in his arm. But again, there are plenty of plays that mirror what we see on Sundays with him succeeding previously on Saturdays, in my opinion.
Yeah, and when you look at these players, well, I've been looking at a lot of quarterbacks and thinking of them in many respects as boxers for the past few years. And when you think about comparing them from that standpoint, because there's so many little technical ends of the spectrum that are related, you know, the feet drive, you know, what's going on with your mind and how you deliver a throw. So it's about processing information and then executing it. And, you know, we left off with Sam Darnold. We're heading to Rosen. Sam Darnold, to me, is kind of like the big puncher who can land a punch from any angle. And it's crazy. His feet may not always be where they need to be, but he can still deliver with power, even from an unconventional angle. And he's a bit of a brawler, and he's physical, and you know, he's a little better boxer than you think. But he's a guy that really wants to get you in close quarters and just you know, exchange. And Rosen is more of the ring general. He is a ring strategist who has just perfect technique. You know, when you're talking or close to it, when it comes to his dropbacks, you know, his play action game, his footwork in terms of from the setup through the release, he's got a very balanced release, so the ball doesn't drift one side to the other nearly as often as some other quarterback prospects that we normally see. It's just a very clean release that has power to it. I mean, he can throw the ball, you know, 50 to 60 yards in stride, pinpoint, you know, with a great deal of consistency. I would say it's more consistent probably in the 45 to 50 yard range, but he can get, you know, he can get the ball in plus 50 yards at times too. So it's a better arm than some people realize. And it's very consistent. I mean, I was talking about one time where, you know, I think it was against USC where he threw a deep crosser to Jordan Lasley pinpoint, and there was an illegal man downfield penalty. On the next play, he came back through the exact same route and hit it exactly the same way. And I've seen that repeatedly with him. But as good as a field, you know, as a ring general he is at being able to, you know, maneuver and throw and play action and 1-3-5-7-step drops and all of that, and even adjusting his drops, he thinks that he has to prove. I think he thinks he has to prove something sometimes. When you watch him play, he has what I've heard some people call the self-destruct gene, you know, the Eli Manning, you know, Alex Smith, Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers, late in the game, I'm going to try and throw the ball in an inexplicable place that everyone's like, you've been playing great all game. Why would you make that decision? And he does. And I remember seeing the first time with Ryan Riddle, a former Bleacher Report writer and former, you know, defensive end in the NFL and with the Cal Bears. And we watched him against BYU at UCLA. And he had like three red zone plays at least, or two at least, where he tried to throw across his body rolling to the right and got intercepted in the end zone. He was a freshman that year. But I continue to see that. Even last year against Memphis, there's a perfect example of him doing that late in the game. And I hear that, you know, I talked to Elliot Crist about this at Pro Football Focus. And after I told him, you know, what I was observing, he found a stat that they were tracking that showed, like, apparently when they're within 7 points late in the game, Rosen's quarterback rating takes like a nosedive. And it's because my theory is, you know, and some of this is narrative, and I don't put this quite in the, you know, in my analysis here. I just say that his decision making gets too aggressive at times, and I point out what that is. But if someone were to ask me what do I think it is, I think that this is a kid who grew up in a well-educated family with a, you know, a tennis background, so he's learned all this technique and he's been able to translate it from one sport to another. So he's a very cerebral, technically proficient guy who is kind of probably talked about a lot as very smart. And when you get on the field and you're talked about being this very smart, you kind of want to – you always want to show your teammates that you're a little more than that, because football is a game of toughness and football is a game of physicality. And I think that there are times that – that Rosen probably, while he's a tough guy, and I think he's a cerebral guy, sometimes he's that boxer who he may be ahead on points or maybe in a close fight, and he gets drawn into the brawl, and he's not a brawler. So he'll try to brawl, and he'll leave his chin open, you know, chin up, and he'll end up kissing the canvas, you know, at a moment. And I think that those types of throws across the body are those moments where he's like, I'm going to show that I've got that kind of gunslinger power to be able to throw across my body and make the amazing creative play. And somebody out there is saying, Josh, that's not your game.
Right.
Be your game. Don't try to be something else. And I think that's a maturity factor that either it will never get out of him, and he'll occasionally always do that, and it'll be at times that people will absolutely hate it, and he'll hate himself for it later, or he'll grow past it enough that it only happens very rarely.
Moments of identity crisis. Let's quickly hit on this personality talk. Not really critiquing his personality, because that's not the point, but kind of critiquing how it's being discussed. My biggest thing, and this has been picked up for the last 3-4 years, is, and again, I cite anonymous scouts a lot because it's my job to blurb it for Roto World, but every time I do it, I want to stress that there are 300 plus scouts in the NFL, right? So we can't push this narrative that one scout's opinion is the entire NFL's opinion. Plus there's 100 other GMs, execs, even more coaches, so on and so forth, that have at least fingerprints on the process. And that's a whole nother discussion that I'll probably get to in another podcast. My point being here, Matt, is like, we don't know what Josh Rosen's personality is. What is being discussed is information from someone in the anonymous scout or coach or whoever about someone else you've never met in Josh Rosen. To me, I just look at it as me and you. We could meet the same person and come away, and we have in the past, we've discussed this, with a different interpretation of if we get along with them, what their flaws, weaknesses are, yada, yada, so on and so forth. And that just happens throughout this entire time when these prospects spend 30 minutes, an hour, how much ever time with these NFL people as well.
Yeah. And I think that your point about how large the NFL pool is of people who are going to evaluate this person and how few of these people are actually giving these commentary, and who are these people, you know? Well, you know, the average scout is somewhere between, you know, and I don't mean to denigrate age out of wisdom or experience because that's not true, but the average guys are in their early 20s to early 30s. They've usually are making less than $30,000 a year. They're traveling a whole bunch, and they're there to collect data and then watch some film and provide that information. So if you're going to talk about the problem with the whole editorializing or armchair psychoanalysis of a player and how much it's being counted, it really does depend on the team, because some teams will have a security specialist or someone with an industrial psychology background or someone with some sort of expertise at parsing information of this nature and making a good value judgment on it. The best teams tend to have those people, and they work with the GM and the decision makers, and they're the only ones that make that commentary. Yep. And they usually ask the scouts to just write down behavior, not what they think of it. And the difference is like this: if they have a scout, go to a bar, go to a town, the college town, and walk around the town and go to and say, you know, after they've talked to the so that someone in the locker room or the assistant coach or a trainer or whoever, recruiting guy, and they say, yeah, the guy spends a lot of time over at this club. All right, so he goes over to the club and asks, he asks a waitress and a bartender, you know, have you seen this guy, shown a picture of him? Can you tell me about what he does? And, you know, one might say, yeah, he comes in here with his three buddies. They're dressed like this. They look like that. They sit at a table. They're always talking to a bunch of women. They're buying drinks for a bunch of women. They're here every night. Well, one guy might come back and say he's always out at the bars. He loves the nightlife. He loves to party. And you've got one impression of him. The other guy might have enough knowledge and experience to go or maybe directed by a more experienced person to say, okay, so he comes here every night. How long does he stay? For about 90 minutes. When does he usually come? Oh, about 8 o'clock at night. When does he leave? About 9:30. Does he drink? Nope. He only brings his own bottle of water. I've never seen him order a drink. He only drinks his own bottle of water. And has he ever gotten in trouble? No, never gets in any trouble. He just hangs out with his friends. A lot of women come by and talks with them and then he usually just goes home after that. Those are the same. That's the same thing, completely different accounts. And it comes down to maybe one set of scouts editorializing what they think happened based on their limited ability to, ask critical questions or understand right. which questions to ask, and another one who has experience with that. And some teams ask the scouts to armchair psychoanalyze, which is kind of problematic, and other teams don't want that at all, and they know how to kind of look at that information.
Yeah, and that can be different for high-profile prospects and then ones that might get, the 6th, 7th UDFA tags. And then for the latter, I mean, you might just have 15 minutes with them, and yet these, professional evaluators are also asked to be professional personality evaluators as well. So it's just – it's just kind of the gross process, like to me, like a gross aspect of the process that just to me,
and
like I don't
want
to like keep – Yeah, and I just don't want to like keep pushing like this narrative and conclusions on someone's personality that like none of us have even met, right? Because we might think of them totally different if we actually met them. So
listen, I'll say one last thing.
Yeah.
It's I've spent probably about 15 years hiring people in that age range and older, probably people from the age range of about 20 to about 45. I spent about 15 years, working with people, hiring them as entry-level people, as supervisors, as managers, as branch managers, on that kind of level. And I can tell you, interviewing people over those years, that especially younger folks, they change. I mean, I've known folks who are absolutely
great
workers. Yeah, so have I. I mean, some of the things Josh Rosen talked about doing, or that they've talked about him doing, I've done that or worse. As a teenager and in my late teens. And I think about that or I think about my first job. And, if someone were to take a look at me and my first job, I worked at a grocery store for all of 4 hours, decided that I did not want to live my life with the dull-eyed stare of a dairy cow for the entire summer, stocking shelves. Those of you who do that, more power to you. I couldn't do it. I went home, walked home, you know, didn't even say I quit, just left, never came back to that grocery store, which, you know, you think about that in a job standpoint, even as a young person, and say, that's horrible, you shouldn't do that, you know, you know, it's unprofessional. And I went back to a place that offered me a job picking up trash outside, basically riding around on a cart that summer, and decided I'd rather do that than work in a grocery store. And I mean, but someone would look at you and perceive that you don't have a work ethic, that you're not professional, that you don't handle things well. And that's it, you know, at a young age, no, I mean, you know, things change, and you got to give people the room to be able to do that. But you also have to know what those markers are. And a lot of people who are just there to collect data and scout film don't have that experience and training.
And quitting is not necessarily a bad thing, but that's a conversation for another time. Okay, let's go to Baker Mayfield. We've talked quite a bit, both of us individually and our own stuff, about Baker because he was at the Senior Bowl. Just quickly, and we've got about 15 minutes left. We want to hit on three more names. What I see with Baker, and I'm not saying he's a similar prospect to Deshaun Watson last year, but I would say that they are in somewhat similar situations because Baker Mayfield played behind probably the best offensive line in college football. A lot of his game was in a clean situation, but even when it wasn't, he has this, you know, playmaker mentality where he can create time, even avoid sacks, and wants to hit on multiple levels of the field. Now, I think this is a tough thing to discern. I would call him accurate, but I would not call his placement great. Like, he doesn't technically, like, set up yards after catch quite well all the time. But with Baker Mayfield, again, this is someone, and this is part of the earlier part of my conversation, Matt, where, you know, I used to only watch players, like, that were in distress, that were quarterbacks when they were pressuring the pocket, because I valued that most. But I've kind of come to learn that identifying also what a quarterback does in a completely clean situation means that's most likely what you're going to get. That's the ideal scenario of what you're going to get. So that's also equally important as well.
Yeah, it is. And I think the drop in the Deshaun Watson reference is very good. And I agree with you there. I actually have him compared to Deshaun Watson for similar reasons.
Oh, wow. I had no idea, Matt.
Absolutely. Yeah. I see him as that. And when I say Deshaun Watson in that comparison, it's similar to you. I think it's that what he does, what he will do well in the NFL is dependent on the NFL providing him a situation where he can excel the most. And to me, that's being able to have a lot of pre-snap movement and motion to draw the defense to a side, and for him to use that play action game and mobility to set up, you know, first and second reads with that movement. And I think that if you allow him to do that and create passing lanes for him, he can deliver, you know, accurate throws that, you know, that are big plays. And I think that, yes, he does have a playmaker mentality. I think Georgia exposed him very well in terms of what his limitations are, which is, or where he struggles right now, which is, you know, tight man coverage, where he has to be pinpoint with his throws, and he has to maybe maneuver from the pocket and reset and fire with that on a consistent level. I think when the pocket keeps him inside of it, you know, when they can bookend him off the edges and keep it tight there, he can struggle a little bit in those confines to throw pinpoint accurate passes. And I know a lot of people will say, well, look at PFF's, you know, high accuracy rates and all of that. And I understand that, but I know that people chart things differently. Yeah. I also know that placement is, you know, how you define placement is very important. And I'll end it with this story to give you an idea of that. Think about Mike Holmgren, how good of a coach Mike Holmgren was, you know, in his early years, or the teams that he had and the quarterbacks that he had. And think about in his early years as an offensive coordinator and a quarterback coach with Joe Montana and Steve Young. And he's with Bill Walsh. And this is an experienced football guy. Well, you know, he may not have been a coach, but, you know, you get, or a head coach, but at this level, when you're already a quarterback coach or a head coach for a championship caliber team and Hall of Fame caliber quarterbacks, you know a thing or two about football at this point, right? So the fact that he's in a practice and he's saying good throw to, you know, a Montana to Rice throw in practice, and Bill Walsh says, don't tell Joe Montana that was a good throw. That's not a good throw. A good throw for me is this, and defines it so clearly and so specifically that what pinpoint to him is that Holmgren never forgot that, but it was something that Holmgren had to learn, because the difference between what Holmgren saw as a pinpoint throw or a good throw was different than what Bill Walsh saw. And what Bill Walsh saw was why the West Coast offense actually worked and excelled and became the offense of a generation. And that level of standard, the difference between what, you know, Holmgren was looking at was maybe the top 5% of all quarterbacks. What Bill Walsh wanted was the top 1%. And it's that difference that Tom House talks about with Tom Brady, that, you know, players like Tom Brady come to him because they want to be 1% better, not 5% better. And Mayfield, Freudian slip, Mayfield.
Some Mayfield, foreshadowing there? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Mayfield, who I think, and I liked Manziel. But Mayfield has some of that movement like Manziel, not quite as wild.
Right.
And he's a little more accurate than Manziel. And I think Manziel had a better arm. But Mayfield's the type of guy that I think he's at that 5% right now, mm-hmm. not at that 1%. And teams that require that 1%, that 99th percentile of accuracy, he's not going to be that quarterback right now. So he could play well immediately, but he'll need that system around him the way Deshaun Watson does to maximize his strengths and minimize some of the flaws that if he were in a West Coast system strictly without all that movement, he might be forced to make throws more often that aren't in his wheelhouse.
And we'll say, like, his ability to just evade sacks is pretty uncommon. Like, it's kind of fun to watch, honestly. Like,
yeah.
Tennessee at the start of the 2016 season, I believe it was. Like, how many, when they had that fourth quarter comeback, just that he was out of reach of, is awesome and jaw-dropping. And then, I mean, you obviously do question, like, if it is repeatable once you get to the NFL. Okay, let's go to Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson's always an interesting topic to discuss. The Louisville quarterback, who I've seen plenty of progression from when he was, like, splitting time as a freshman to what he is now. Matt, I think the simplest way to explain him is to say that the highlights that will be shown over and over and over again and have for the last 3 years are when he puts his foot in the dirt, even on design or undesigned runs, and takes off and is one of the most electrifying playmakers we've ever seen. But to me, that overshadows and kind of unfortunately just kind of the subtleties that he has while working inside of structure. And again, I don't think that his work inside of structure is talked about enough.
Not nearly enough. The way I look at it is this. When I see those types of highlights, I say, turn off the 2015, 2016 tape and watch 2017 Lamar Jackson, because Lamar Jackson's ability, he has quiet feet. That's what Tony Romo describes, you know, Brady, Breeze, Jared Goff having. He said, I knew Jared Goff would be special after watching a ton of his tape and liking a lot of what I saw, but I felt like this kid had an extra level to his game because he has quiet feet. That's the ability that when you drop back, finish your drop, that when you need to maneuver the pocket, you're not taking too much space and you're staying within a good stance to be able to throw within rhythm. And Lamar Jackson has that as well, if not better than any quarterback in his class. His issue is that maybe his feet are a little too narrow at times, and it forces him to be throwing from an off-balance perspective. And that means that he's not either maximizing the velocity he can get, which is very, very seldom, because he can flick the ball like Michael Vick flicks the ball. Mm-hmm. Or that it's just he kind of wavers from side to side a little bit and unbalanced, and the ball is a little bit off target at times, and that's more common. But he is a quarterback. He is not a wide receiver. If he's a wide receiver to a team, then that team is not an NFL football team. That's the way I look at it. I mean, I'll make the same except that's what I'll say. I mean, if someone says Lamar Jackson's a wide receiver, that scout says that, I'm going to say, you're not a scout. You must be a janitor. I mean, because basically, and I know that's a strong take, but that's how good Lamar Jackson really is. He is Michael Vick with a better understanding of the pocket, of his footwork, of his reads and of his decision making, and he has better accuracy than Michael Vick ever did coming out of school. If you ask me if Michael Vick was worth the Falcons, well, he wasn't, if you ask me, trading down to so that the Chargers could get LaDainian Tomlinson and Drew Brees.
Yeah, you know.
I knew that from the beginning. I was like, wow. But if they thought Michael Vick was worth a high first-round pick, I honestly think Lamar Jackson is too. But he will not be seen that way in this current NFL environment because he's, again, not a Q-bot quite yet.
Right.
And, you know, you look at this and they're looking too much at the running and the younger tape rather than what he's really done as he's progressed. And there's going to be a team at the end of the first round that doesn't need a quarterback right now. And I bet that they end up getting him and he ends up being fantastic.
And as much as we like to talk positively about him, and we should, he obviously does have some things to work on. And those are things we'll highlight as we go along, right? Like he's not a what you see is what you get in every single snap. But I do want to point this out, Matt, because this actually got posted to me on Twitter earlier today. PFF noted that of his 232 rushing attempts this season, only 50 came from scrambles, right? And so a lot of times people say, well, as soon as he feels pressure, he leaves, right? Lamar Jackson wants and becomes a runner. And that's just not the case at all.
No.
More often, he will buy himself some time, and I've posted plenty of clips on it. He'll buy himself some time and then look for the open receiver and dish it that way. And it also, I mean, it doesn't hurt that when he does decide to become a runner, he is lethal, and he will gain yards, and he has more rushing yards in his career than Saquon Barkley does, if we're just like comparing apples to oranges here. Like, that's just an insane number to think of.
Yeah, it couldn't be more false, the idea that he runs all the time, because really, of all the quarterbacks, he is the best at staying in the pocket until the very last moment, because he's so confident in how quick he is that he will let his receivers run off defenders to the point that now he's got 15, 20 yards before anyone can even get near him. And it's like he does that extremely well. And I'll just say this. You can go to my YouTube channel, the RSP Film Room, and you can check out my Josh Allen Lamar Jackson comparison, and all the things that are attributed to Lamar Jackson, you might as well put it on Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And all the things that are said about Josh Allen before the season started that were so glowing, you might as well give it to Lamar Jackson. And I'll just say, you know, I'll end it with this. You know, the one statistical thing that people talk about with him that no passer who's had, you know, sub 60% completion percentage has, you know, few have ever really done well in the NFL and have played all that well. But I'll look at it this way. There's a certain quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks who, until he went to a highly structured West Coast offense that ran the ball a heck of a lot and let him have easy play action passes in the name of Russell Wilson, he didn't have a single season above 60% completion percentage when he played at NC State. And when I studied Russell Wilson, who I happen to like a fair bit. You remember you hosted the show with me and Dane and and Wes Bunting way back in the day, and it wasn't the Wisconsin tape that impressed me. It was the NC State tape where he was forced to play a lot like the way Lamar Jackson is forced to play that impressed me the most. Yeah. So when I look at that, the stats are interesting, but again, where we may risk losing is that I think he's the exception to this rule. Where people will end up winning odds on against me on that is the stats will show, you know, that he is not the exception to the rule. We're going to find out.
Let's close it out with, as you mentioned, Josh Allen. And again, simply put, and these are all just simple little evaluations from me, he's a pedal to the floor quarterback. there is no touch, no finesse to his game. And so you'll get these ridiculous throws when he rolls to his right and throw 40 plus yards on the field, which honestly, Matt, might be his best throw in his arsenal. But then you also get plays where in back-to-back throws to his tight end 7 yards down the field, he'll completely sail him over down the seam or lead him completely into an oncoming safety that he just doesn't see because there's no loft, there's no touch, there's no finesse to his game. Again, he has a rocket launcher. He uses it over and over and over again. It's like you're playing an FPS, right? And you don't want to use a shotgun. You don't use the pistol, any of these. You just want to use the rocket launcher over and over and over again. To me, that's just Josh Allen's game. And yes, he's mobile. Yes, he's athletic. But like, one, comparisons to Cam Newton are absolutely crazy. And two, I think that if we're talking about players who need a lot of work in order to execute what you want out of your structure, there's a long way to go here for Josh Allen.
Yeah, if I were to compare him to anybody, I would probably say he's more in the Joe Flacco, Blaine Gabbert, Jamarcus Russell kind of category. And I know a lot of people will cringe and say, those guys were horrible quarterbacks other than Flacco. And then the Flacco people, the Flacco haters will come out in force and say, he's a bad quarterback too. You know, but really, I think from the skill standpoint, I love how you say pedal to the metal, because I think about driving through that area of the country and I turn on radio back in the day and it was a lot of hair metal bands, you know, and you think about and I think of Josh Allen as kind of this hair metal quarterback, you know, all the, you know, the fast licks and the power chords and the, you know, and it's just this one driving steady beat all the time, you know, and you think that, and then you go to the concert and you watch what's going on before you, and suddenly you see this, you see them maybe play an occasional ballad, and there's some musicality there, and there's some skill that you may not have, that you may have missed because there's so much of the hype concerning, you know, all the speed licks and everything. And when you look at Josh Allen's game a little closer, there is some evidence of touch. It's seldom, but it's there. I've seen him throw, you know, take something off the ball and be able to, you know, lead a receiver downfield and do some really nice work in the pocket where he's able to climb and throw and flush outside. And he occasionally will do this to the point where there's some hope for me, where I look at that and I go, I understand why GMs look at him and say, oh, you know, this touches my heart from like 50 years ago when I watched the I formation and, you know, but seriously, like, you know, he's an I formation quarterback who can do all the drops and the play action and step up and fire with that gun. But you also see some of the hints of him being able to sidestep pressure and hit an accurate throw, or to be able to throw a touch throw there. And that's all good. But the question for me is, when things get a little bit hairy and the pocket gets tight, he sees flashes of pressure at times where he overreacts. To me, quarterbacks fight or flight, and you want more fight than flight. And there's a little bit more flea in his game at times. It doesn't mean that he's not tough. It just means that he sees that flash. He tends to overreact, come off a read that was open. And if he was able to actually just have a controlled movement like, you know, Lamar Jackson does, or Josh Rosen does, or even Sam Darnold, and be able to throw that ball a little more accurately, or not just ignore it altogether. And then there's just some bad decisions that come with it where he leans too much on that arm and he takes himself out of scoring range, his team out of scoring range, or just makes some boneheaded plays where he just completely misses reads because of that little flash that wasn't anything there. It's like, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that when you see his game, I think he's kind of the mannequin for what old school NFL GMs want. And they think that they can just put the clothes on him and he's going to turn into a living, breathing, good quarterback.
Yeah.
And maybe that happens, or maybe it could.
From what we've seen, like you said, there are like little flashes of like, oh, if this was his consistent play, like, oh, we've really got something. And a couple things I want to hit on that you touched on. I even think like he has that pedal to the floor style when he runs with the football as well. Like when he drops his eyes instead of, you know, like we just talked about with Lamar in terms of resetting and then looking up again, he takes off and runs. And like we've seen him run all the way to the left sideline, then the right sideline, then all the way back to the left. Like that's just his style. And I want to conclude on this question to you. Do you think the outward perception or coverage of Josh Allen would be different if he was a perceived, like, let's say, third round quarterback rather than possible top 10 pick?
You're right where I was going to conclude with this, is if I could get him somewhere between the third and fifth round, I would be really excited about him. But the idea that he is a top 15 selection makes me really nervous. And it's based on that past history, again, of, you know, the Jamarcus Russell, Blaine Gabbert, big arm, can move around, can make some really nice NFL caliber throws from a physical end. But as we see, the NFL, what happens is the NFL is, NFL quarterbacking is a leadership game that includes the physical, technical, conceptual, and intuitive. And when you look at Josh Allen's game, it's physical. It has a good bit of technical to it. I can't tell you about the leadership other than on the field. And to me, on the field, leadership is about decision making. And that's a little inconsistent and also has some flaws that are lacking in maturity, like a lot of quarterbacks. But the conceptual and the intuitive, which is really what ties everything together and elevates quarterback play beyond good college play to strong NFL play, it's not there with him on a level that I would feel comfortable making him a top 15 or even a first or second round pick.
Matt, I want to thank you for joining me. I want to thank the trains for joining me as well. It's always a multi-guest podcast whenever I record at home. And again, if any of you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to go out and purchase the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. You can find it on mattwaldmanrsp.com. Check out all of his work on YouTube. And, you know, if you enjoy this podcast, subscribe, rate and review, that type of stuff. And also check out Matt's work on Football Guys as well. Yeah, I guess that's it. Matt, thanks so much. And for all of you out there, we will talk to you all soon. See ya.
All aboard.
Choo-choo.